Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Yuma, daf Samech Beis. Thank the Lupin Foundation for supporting our daf. The learning we do this morning will be in memory of Lois Altman. The daf is, we're finishing up today the fourth perek of the, sorry, let's do that better, the fifth perek of Yuma. That's correct. Been here for a while. So we're finishing the fifth perek of Yuma today. We're going to, God willing, start the sixth perek of the Masechta. The fifth perek, we're in the middle of a discussion in the Gemara regarding how to view the hazos of the Avodas Yom HaKippurim. There are three sets of hazos. There's hazah done in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, then again in the Heichal in the direction of the Parochas, and then a third time on the Mizbeach HaZahav. And how do we view them? So basically it turns into a machlokas tanaim in terms of how we view them. Do we view them as just simply sprinkle, sprinkle, sprinkle? In other words, every one is just its own independent sprinkling. Or no, is it viewed as a set? Is it, each one of them viewed as its own separate set? Has a certain goal, a certain mission it needs to accomplish, and once mission is accomplished, so then you get a check on the box, and then you move on to the next set. Lamai nafkamina, what difference does it make? So the Gemara points out, what if the blood spills somewhere in the middle? Somewhere in the middle of set number one, or set number two, or set number three, and you have the blood spill, and the blood spilled, and it's unrecoverable, and I need to now get a new animal and to start anew. So from what point do I start from? So the opinion of Rabbi Meir, which is the Tanakhama of our Mishnah, says basically start at the beginning of the set, wherever set you were at. So if you were in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and you were somewhere in the middle sprinkling the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so you go back and you start again from the beginning of that set. If, let's say, you were in the Heichal and you were somewhere in the middle of the Heichal, so you start again at the beginning of the Heichal. The Kodesh HaKadoshim is done. That set's complete, it's finished. So you just now move into the Heichal and you do the Heichal. And again, same thing with the Mizbeach. If I'm in the middle of the Mizbeach and the blood spills, so I get a new animal, shecht it again, Kabbalah Saddam, and you bring it inside, and you start at the beginning of the Mizbeach HaZahav. Okay, that's the way the Rebbe Meir views it, the viewpoint of the Tanakhama of our Mishnah. We already had a number of brises on Samach Aleph Amud Aleph, yesterday's daf, that spoke to this idea, that we view each one as its own separate set. Then there was the opinion of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon say that, no, each hazah in of itself is significant, and so therefore, if, let's say, the blood spills at any point in time, when you shecht your new animal, and you bring your new animal, so what do? You just start from wherever you left off. In other words, so if you're in the middle of your Kodesh HaKadoshim hazahs, so you just pick it up exactly where you left off. You don't have to redo any of the other ones you did previously. They learn it from the pasuk of Chitu Achas. You just do one sprinkling is enough, and each hazah in of itself is its own separate entity. That's the major machlokas between Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, and the Gemara notes that this machlokas that we're discussing now manifests itself in another area in Torah, and that is regarding the Mitzorah. Mitzorah goes through a Tahara process. The Tahara process is spoken about in the Chumash in detail in Sefer Vayikra, Parashas Mitzorah, Perek Yudalid, where there the Torah goes and relates how you go through the specific process of Tahara HaMitzorah, the purification of the Mitzorah. It is a process which I quipped yesterday. Well, I don't know if we're going to understand it. It goes a little bit beyond our understanding, but in terms of the process, the Torah lays out exactly what needs to be done. So you take the blood of the Karban Hashem, and you sprinkle the blood of the Karban Hashem onto three extremities of the Mitzorah, onto his earlobe, onto his right thumb, and onto his right big toe. Then the Torah goes on to describe how then you're going to take the oil, right, the Lok Shaman, Perek Yudalet Pasuk Tezvav, so the Lok Shaman is poured onto the left hand of another Kohen. And then what the Kohen does with the oil in his left hand is he dips his right hand into his left hand, and he sprinkles it in the direction of the Beis HaMikdash, Lifnei Hashem, and he does so seven times. So that's one set of sprinkling of hazah. Then Umiyester Hashem Nasher Al Kapo Yitena Kohen Al Tanochos Nemitaher Yemeniv Abon Yado Yemeniv Abon Raglo Yemeniv Al Dam Hashem. Then the Kohen takes and dips another three times and hits the extremities of the Mitzorah. Excuse me, on the same places where the blood was placed. That's exactly where the where the oil is going to be placed. And then, that's set number two. And then, V'anos B'Hashem, Nashar Kavakon, Yitin HaRosh HaMitaher, V'chipir HaLavakon Lufnei Hashem. And then, whatever's left, you just simply apply to the head of the Mitzorah. So there are three sets of applications regarding the oil, the Lok Shemen of the Mitzorah. And the Gemara noted yesterday, in yesterday's daf, that the same machlokus between Rabbi Meir versus Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon is going to play out. It's going to manifest. Meaning, let's say the oil gets spilled, and it's unrecoverable, and I need to get new oil, and I need to start again. So where do I start from? So again, same shitas. Rabbi Meir says you're going to start from the beginning of the set, whichever set you're on. Either you're at the seven towards the paroches, or you're on the three extremities, bodily extremities of the mitzvah, or you're on the last set, which is the pouring on the rosh. If you're in any one of those sets, you start at the beginning of the set. That would be the shita of Rabbi Meir, corresponding to his shita here regarding Avodas Yom HaKippurim. And Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon will argue the same argument they made, which is, pick it up right where you were left off. Wherever the point was you left off. If you sprinkled it three times and the oil spilled, so get new oil and start now with number four. Okay, so that's it's the same achlokes in Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. The Gemara noted, well, what if the following were to occur? What if, let's say, you had a Karban Hashem, and again, we're back to the Mitzvah. He brought a Karban Hashem, and when the Kohen shechted the Karban Hashem, he shechted Shelo Lishma. He had a machshava, a thought that passes the Karban. So what now becomes? What happens? So the Gemara notes that you're going to now have the same achlokas between Rabbi Meir versus Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Meir will tell you, okay, in other words, obviously the sashim is not going to work for him. As we pointed out yesterday, the carbon's still a good carbon. Meaning the only time a machshava will disqualify a carbon is by a chatos and by carbon pesach. Those are the only two cases where a machshava disqualifies a carbon. On all other occasions where kohen shechts the carbon shelo lishmo, with not the proper owner in mind, or shelo lishmo meaning not the proper carbon in mind, it doesn't disqualify the carbon, but what it does is it detaches the carbon from its owner. So now the owner needs to bring a new carbon. So the Gemara says, according to Rav Meir, so that's fine. Because what is Rav Meir Shita? He says you start from the beginning of the set. So in other words, you have a chance to start anew. The problem's going to be, notes the Gemara, according to Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon says, where do you pick it up from? Right from where you left off. Well, this is going to be a little bit tricky. Right where I left off, I was makdish the Karban Hashem. I shechted the Karban Hashem. Now the blood at this point in time no longer works because it was shechted shelo lishmo, and that shelo lishmo machshava detaches the carbon from its owner. And now I pick it up where I left off. At this point in time, we're in limbo. We're in a halachic limbo right now. And according to Rav Elazar, Rav Shimon, you can't start anew. So the Gemara notes, okay, you're going to get stuck. Fine. That's what's going to happen. Do we find this elsewhere in halacha where you just get stuck, where there's nothing you could do? So the Gemara notes, yeah, we do find that elsewhere in halacha. And remember, we discussed yesterday what happens if you have a nazir who's memurat, a nazir who has no hair in his body. Okay, he's a hairless nazir. So what's the problem? The problem is not when he declares himself to be a nazir. The problem is going to be when he wants to finish his nazirus. Part of the process of finishing his nazirus is that the nazir has to shave his entire body. The problem over here is he has no hair. So he's going to raise, it's going to go over his skin, but it's not going to cut off any hair. So is that okay or is that not okay? So what did we learn yesterday? That itself was a machlokas as well. So in the Gemara, we'll pick it up at this point in time. The Gemara over here is like one long flow. So we'll pick it up right here. So the Gemara says, we did some of this yesterday, Vahatanya. Right in the middle of the Amud, a little bit above the midpoint of the Gemara in Samach Aleph Amud Beis, 61b. And the Gemara says, Vahatanya, we learned on the Brisa, Nazir Memorat. If I have a Nazir who has no hair. So, Shita's Beisil, which obviously is a Shita which we'll accept, Lahalacha, but Shita's Beisil is like, okay, no hair, good, let's move on. Move on to the next part. The whole purpose of shaving is just a hechitim, so it's just a means to get to an end. It's just there to get him to the point where he has no hair. He already has no hair. Let's move on to the next step. Beishame says, no, Havar is Tar. He has to take a blade and run it over his body with the blade. In other words, he has to shave. That's what Beit Shammai says. To which the Gemara says, "V'amar Rav Avina, k'shomer Beit Shammai tzarech vein lo takana." Now Rav Avina says, you know, what Beit Shammai means, not what you think he means. He means he needs to shave his body, but because he has no hair, there's simply nothing he can do. He can't shave his body. Which means then that basically he's stuck. He's in halachic limbo. he cannot move on in terms of his tahara. And so therefore it's going to be unusual, but he's going to be in a position in life where basically he's going to be stuck as a mitzara. No. I know. I caught myself also. Not quick enough. But he's gonna be left a nazir for the rest of his life. Alright, so the Gemara says it's not such an anomaly that you have this idea where you're going to get stuck halachically. It happens, and this is the way Rav Avina explained Beit Shammai. Okay. This is exactly the point we got to yesterday. So we are arguing now that this is also going to be the correct understanding of Reb Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. That according to Reb Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, and the Gemara argued even according to Reb Meir maybe as well, that you're just simply going to be stuck in halachic limbo because you just cannot proceed. The Gemara notes, Duplika de Rabbi Pedas. Now, Rabbi Pedas, an Amora, has a different understanding of Beit Shammai. Not the one we just argued. We just argued that according to Beit Shammai, you are in halachic limbo. And to which Rabbi Pedas says, no, I don't agree. To Amr Rabbi Pedas, and how do I know that he argues? Because he says, Beit Shammai v'Rabbi Elazar Amru Davar Echad. I can align Beit Shammai and Rabbi Elazar. We do this all the time throughout the Gemara, where we take Shitas Tanaim and we try to string them together. In other words, unify different positions amongst the Tanaim. Beit Shammai Hadamar. Now, as far as Beit Shammai's opinion is concerned, so we said it. Let's say it again. That if a Nazir doesn't have any hair, so Beit Shammai says he still needs Havar's Tar. He still needs to rub a blade on his over his body. Now again, Rabbi Pedas is arguing with the previous explanation, which basically we know now means you're going to run the blade over your skin. Meaning according to Beit Shammai, not that you can't, that's exactly what you're going to do, even though it's not going to accomplish anything. Rabbi Elazar agrees in principle in a different scenario. Now we jump back to the Mitzorah. Now remember, regarding the Mitzorah, so there's applications to his right earlobe, his right thumb, and his right big toe. And we apply to those extremities the blood of the Karban Hashem and the oil and the Log Shemen. So the Bryce over here deals with the following question. Ein lo bowen yad ubowen regel. Ein lo tahara olamis. Okay, unusual scenario, but let's say he doesn't have a thumb, he doesn't have a right big toe. An amputee, or maybe an abnormality at birth, whatever the case is, he doesn't have. So now, and he becomes a mitzora. So, talk about mazel. So, it doesn't mention the year, I don't know. L'chol rehu adin.
I understand.
Okay, yes. I also observed that the year is not mentioned here. He didn't have a right toe. He didn't have a right thumb. And, okay, now what does he do with the Mitzorah process? Now, the Torah is very clear. The Torah says an application of the blood has to go on his right toe and is on his right thumb. And, well, the Torah doesn't say, but what if he doesn't? So the Braisa asks, but what if he doesn't? So, Ein lo bowen yad uvowen regel, Ein lo tahara olamis. So the Tanakhama says, sorry. Meaning he's going to be in this state of tzaras, of tumas tzaras, for the remainder of his life. Okay, that's it's unfortunate again. But that's not our meaning. It's unfortunate, but that's not the point that we want to focus on. We're focusing on the next position in the braisa. Rabbi Elazar Omer knows that I'm a come over yotze. So Rabbi Elazar says, you know what you do? You apply the blood where? To his phantom limb. Okay, you know the amputees, they have phantom pain. You know, on the limbs that aren't there. So somehow the limb communicates to the brain. It's not, the limb's not there, obviously, but there's some sort of communication to the brain that the limb is there, and the brain translate that as, okay, it's hurting, and it's an unbelievable oddity where you have pain on a limb that doesn't exist. So but over here, so Rebbe Elazar says, so what you do is you apply it. Even though there is no thumb, even though there is no big toe, you apply it to that area. Okay. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Imnasan Al Shal Small Yatzen. Rabbi Shimon has a novel solution, and that is put on the left hand, and it works. And again, our purpose right now is not to focus on Rabbi Shimon. Our purpose right now is to focus on Rabbi Elazar. So, what do you see from Rabbi Elazar? He doesn't have a big toe. He doesn't have a big thumb, and nevertheless, you could fulfill his obligation of tahara, and by putting it on the area. Even though it's a health dish, it's not there. Same thing, in other words, and Rabbi Pedas says, you see the cheat of Rabbi Elazar? It's just like Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai says that if you have a Nazir who has no hair in his body, you still take a blade and you put it over his body and you rub it over his body. So in other words, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi and Beit Shammai are both of the opinion that even though it's not going to help, there's nothing there, there's no hair on the Nazir, there's no thumb on the Mitzorah, nevertheless, the formality of right, going down with the blade, or applying the blood and oil to the makom ha-etzpa, makom ha-godel is still going to be enough. Okay, so, and what we get from here is Rabbi Elazar doesn't agree, sorry, Rabbi Pedas doesn't agree with the previous interpretation of Beit Shammai. Fine. Tana Rabbanan. V'lakach midam ha-ashem yachol b'kli. Okay, now, Karban Asham that is offered by the Mitzorah, I go back to the Pesukim, we're in Parshas Mitzorah, beginning Perek Yedaled, and we are now discussing the shechting of the Karban Asham. Now the Karban Asham is unique by the Mitzorah, in other words, the regular rules of a Karban Asham, but it's unique to the Mitzorah because some of the blood is going to be diverted from the animal and brought directly to the Mitzorah. I mean, usually what happens to the blood after the shechting of a Karban, a Kabbalas Adam, in a Kli, you collect the blood in a bowl, and you bring it to the Mizbech, and you sprinkle on the Mizbech. That's usually what happens by Karban Hashem. Here the Torah says, so the Torah says that he takes blood from the Karban Hashem, and he's going to apply it to the right ear, and the right hand, the right thumb, and the right big toe of the Mitzvah. Okay, so basically, again, this has really nothing to do with our discussion of Yuma, but as long as we were on the topic of Mitzvah, so the Gemara is going to spend just a couple more minutes together going over some other halachas regarding the Taharas of Mitzvah. When the Kohen is taking the blood for the Mitzvah, so how is he taking it? In a Kli? So the Gemara is going to answer no. V'lakach midam ha'asham yachol b'kli. I might have thought that I should take it with a Kli. Because generally speaking, when you shecht an animal, that's how you take the blood. You take the blood by holding a bull right under the neck and accepting the blood in a bull. Tamalomar v'nasan. The Gemara says, we know that's not true because application is done with the hand. The Kohen's going to take his hand and apply it to the extremities of the Mitzvah. So, the Gemara says, Ma nesina ba'atzma shel Kohen. So just like the application is done with your hand, that means the lakicha has to be done with your hand. Meaning both of those verbs are found in the same pasuk. So the Gemara's understanding, the Bryce's understanding is that it must be done in one singular act. The acceptance of the blood and the application of the blood. Of the blood. So the Gemara says, now I'm confused, because we also know that part of the blood of the Karban Hashem has to go to the Mizbeach, meaning this is a Karban Hashem, blood has to go to the Mizbeach, how is that blood collected? So Yachal Afla Mizbeach Kein, maybe the blood for the Mizbeach also is accepted in the hand. Tamalam Raki Kechatat Hashem. The Gemara says, remember I read this pasuk yesterday, I told you, hold on to this pasuk. The Torah says, Kechatas Kehasham, meaning that the Hashem over here is going to be like the Chatas. What is it? What's the Torah trying to convey to us? Ma chatas to an kli, af asham to an kli. Meaning, just like the carbon chatas requires a kli, so to the asham. So now, are we confused? No, we're not confused. There are two bloods being collected at the same time from the carbon asham. Nimtzeis ata omer asham etzor shnei kohan mekabel mestamo echa biyad veechad bekli. That means that after the animal shechted, there's going to be two recipients of the blood. One's going to be there with his hand accepting some of the blood, and someone's going to be there with a kli accepting some of the blood. Now, visually speaking, it's kind of hard to imagine how, I've never even been present in the shechting of a large animal. So, I imagine it works. Somehow it works where you can have two people standing there, each one collecting blood. And the one who accepted with a kli, he's going to go en route to the Mizbech to do the Zrikas Adam. And the one that's going to the Mitzorah, he's going to be holding the blood in his hand, having collected in his hand, in order to apply to his extremities. So, as we described yesterday, he's going to be at the entrance. Meaning he can't be in the Azara because he still is lacking in a Tahara. So he can't be in the Azara. So he's going to be at the Nicanor entrance. And the blood can't go outside of the Azara. So we described yesterday. So what the Kohen is going to be doing is he's going to just stick his extremities into the airspace of the Azara. What we referred to yesterday as Bia B'miktsas. It's a partial entrance, which is not a Bia, which is not a full entrance. And so the Gemara doesn't mention it here, but that's how... That's how that transfer is going to be done. Okay. One more topic we're going to finish up, and then we move to the new parak. Our last topic that we're going to be discussing is the following. We spent the last couple of days, Daf Samach and Daf Samach Aleph, talking about what if. And the what if that we've been entertaining is, what if the blood spills? Cohen sprinkling the blood in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and by accident he trips, he falls, whatever, it slips out of his hand, and the blood spills and it's unrecoverable. So what he has to do, he has to get new blood. Now what do you mean get new blood? Get new blood means get a new animal. Get a new animal, and by extension, by getting a new animal, it means he's going to get new blood. So that means then that by the end of the day, the tally of animals that he's going to have may be a lot larger than what he was expecting. Meaning if we need another bull, I guess it would have on reserve, just, you know, just in case of emergency. So they would have another bull on reserve. They would have another goat on reserve. And okay, they would get another animal. Fine. So this second animal certainly will be a par for your Yom Kippur. What becomes of that first animal? Now, it's a funny question. What does that mean? What becomes of that first animal? That first animal also was a par. That first animal also was a seir. Now, what in general? Let's set the table before we go further in the Gemara. What normally happens to the seir and the par of Yom Kippur? Okay, not burnt on the Mizbeach. Generally speaking, I mean, there are not that many applications of this general rule, but generally speaking, any chatas whose blood is going to be sprinkled in the Heichal. Now, it's true on Yom Kippur. It's also true for Parhal and Davar Shel Tzibur. It's also true for Sirei Avodah Zarah. Okay. Any carbon whose blood is sprinkled in the Heichal is not burnt on the Mizbeach, but rather burnt chutz l'machana, taken out of the three encampments, taken out of Machane Shechina, Machane Levia, Machane Yisrael, and burnt outside. Later in the Masechta, we're going to talk about how some people enjoyed a bonfire in Yom Kippur, meaning they went out of Yerushalayim and they watched the burning of the par and the seer. Here, in the event that the blood spills and the Kohen's got to get now a new animal, so now you can have a whole bunch of animals that were basically serving as a par and as a seer. The Brisa over here, I know the Gemara starts off with the words Tanan, but it's a Brisa, right? The Gon changes the word to Tanan Rabbanan. So the Brisa over here is going to now discuss what becomes of these substitute animals. And then they're not substitute animals. Substitute's not the right word. But replacement animals. Because the animals of the originals the blood was spilt. So the Torah tells us, so just moving to the back to Achrimos, flipping from Mitzor back to Achrimos. So the Torah says, Pasuk Chav Zayin, Vespar Chatas, Vesir Chatas, Eshu Vazda Mam Lechaper Bekodesh, and as far as the bull and as far as the goat, Yotzio Michutz Machaneh, taken out of the camps, Visarfu Ba'esh, burnt in a fire, Esarosam Vespisaram Vespirsham, the animal's burnt in its entirety, and the hasorefo sam, and the one who burns them, yichabes begadav v'rachat b'sarah b'mayim v'racher ken yavol amachaneh. So his tummy, the person who burns his tummy, tumah goes to the person who burns it. Now it's a little bit odd, obviously. In other words, he's doing a mitzvah, and meanwhile, as a result of that, he's going to become tummy. But it's not the first time in Chumash where you see somebody involved in doing a mitzvah becomes tummy.
Well, do you think it's otherwise with the replacement
animal? So now the question becomes as follows. These additional animals that are brought and shechted, are they going to have the same status? Or maybe let's reverse the question. Meaning, let's not even talk about these new animals that are going to finish the job. Let's talk about the first animal, which now, quite frankly, didn't get the job done. It's only the second or maybe even third animal, well, we'll talk about that in just a moment, which finished the job. Maybe they have the true status of par and seir, and the first animals were kind of like, in other words, they were aborted, so to say, halachically. So that's what the Braisa here is addressing. Tanan Hasam. Vikulan mitamim begadim nisrafim abeis hadesh and divrei abelaz rabbi shimon. So every one of them is going to be metame begadim, meaning that the one who burns them is going to have too much begadim, and as the Torah describes, and nisrafim abeis hadesh is burnt on the special location, on the location site that is designated for the burning of the par and the seer. Divrei Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon. That is the opinion of Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. Okay, now why? Meaning, why is this specific to Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon? Based on what we've been learning these past couple of days. Because according to Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon, every act of sprinkling is significant. And as long as the blood of this animal served in any capacity and was involved and its blood was sprinkled any part of the Avodas Yom Kippurim, so then that means that the animal that the blood came from qualifies as a par and a seir. The Chachamim Omrim ein mitam megadvin nisrafim abeis adeshin ela ha'acharon ho v'gamer bo kapara. And the Chachamim say no, it's only the bull and the goat whose blood finished the job. Meaning any blood and bull goat that was used, let's say for the first one or two or three sprinklings, or even the first seven sprinklings, but you didn't finish. So what happens with the next bull and next goat that shechted? So you start from the beginning of the set. What does that say about the first bull and the first goat? They were aborted. Mission aborted. They didn't work. And so therefore, according to the Chachamim, the first bull and the first goat are simply don't have the status of par and seir of Yom Kippur. And therefore, they don't have to be, they just need to be disposed of. Not on the special burning site that is designated for the par and the seir. And the one who burns it is not going to have to must begad them because they don't have the status of par and seir. So really another ramification of this machlokus between Rebbe Elazar and Rebbe Shimon versus what the Braisa here calls Chachamim, but what we know to be as Rebbe Meir.
What do you do with any Egdish that you, let's say, was disqualified?
So, again,
you do whatever you want with it?
Not whatever you want, you discard it.
You have to discard it, I'm saying. Anyway, I mean, not to, there's no...
There's no special place. In other words, for the part of this year, there was a special site that was designated. Right? What the Gemara refers to as Beis Hadeshen.
Doesn't it get burned up at all?
No, it does. It gets discarded, but it doesn't have a unique status, meaning that the person who burns is not going to become tamei. Okay. So the Chachamar Mein Mitam Begad Mein Esrafim Beis Hadeshen El Achron Hov. Okay, fine. Baminei Rava Mei Rav Nachman. So the Gemara says, okay, question goes like this: Kama Seirim Mishaleach. Rashi explains. Let's imagine that there was a shpichas dam, the blood spilled. I'm sorry, in nishbach dam asir. Let's see the Rashi inside. It's the second to last Rashi on the Amud. In nishbach dam asir la'achir shagamra matanas penim. V'zruch la'avi shnayim ulahagril aleim v'shachat shalshem v'nasan matanas aparochas v'nishbach adam. Scenario over here, a very unusual scenario, unlikely scenario, but what if? Let's say the blood, we're talking specifically about the goat, and now, the blood of the goat was sprinkled in the Kodesh Kodashim, and then after that, the blood got spilled. Okay, unrecoverable. And so now we need a new goat. Here's the problem. I can't just simply pick out a new goat. I have to get a new set of goats, do a new lottery, and then through the lottery, I'll get a new goat Lashem. Which, of course, will leave me with another goat Lazazel. Okay? And let's say the blood of that goat went through the Heichal, sprinkling the blood of that goat through the Heichal, and then the blood spills. Now, I need to do one more. I need to do the Mizbeach HaZahav. So now I'll do another Hagurala. I'll get another two goats. And we're going to get another Sir Lashem. Sprinkle the blood into the on the Mizbeach HaZahav. And now what I'm looking at are three Seirei Lazazel. Okay, so v'hutz rachod la'avishnayim la'hagril aleim v'shachar eshal shem la'matanos ha'mizbeach harei kan shlosha seirei azazel. So as Rashi now is setting up the scenario for us, now we have three seirim la'azazel. Mishlosha zugos, because we had a total of three pairs that we needed on this particular Yom Kippur. Now, so kam seirim mishaleach. Okay, now we have the seir ha'mishaleach. But this particular Yom Kippur, manishtana ha'yom kippur hazeh mikol Yom HaKippurim. So now the problem is that usually it's only one goat that's being sent out, but now I'm looking at three goats that have the status of Sira Mishtaleach. So that was the question that Rava asked from Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman gives a very sharp answer. V'chi Edro Mishaleach? I understand. Does the Torah want us to send out a flock of goats? No. The Torah wants to send out one goat. Rava responds back to Rav Nachman on the top of Samach Beis Amad Aleph, V'chi Edro Saref. Rava says to Rav Nachman, okay, but look, the Torah didn't want us to shecht an entire flock to sprinkle the blood in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. But circumstances just demanded that we ended up with three. That's just the way it worked out. So, mi dami, ha'sam lo k'siv oso, ha'cha k'siv oso. So Rav Nachman still is entrenched in his position. You know, when it comes to the Seir LaHashem, the Torah never singularly says, this goat. But when talking about the Seir HaMashtaleach, the Torah says, L'shalech oso Lazazel. You send it, this one goat, Lazazel. And that ends a very strange conversation between Rav Nachman and Rava regarding what if there were three goats left at the end of the day. Okay, so now we're going to send one goat out. Okay, so now, great question, which goat? So we have goats numbers 1, 2, and 3. Again, how do we get to the scenario? So, just quick refresher. So the blood of the goat Lashem spilled after the sprinkling of the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So we had to get a second pair, in order to determine which one's Lashem, which one's Lazazel. The blood of the second goat spilled after the Hazaz HaParoches. We needed a third pair. And that third pair now finished the job where with that third pair, one was Lazazel and the other one was Lashem, and that Lashem was sprinkled on the Mizbeach Hazav, finishing up the Hazaos in the Beis HaMikdash. So now I have three goats that are determined Lazazel. Rav Nachman has argued, apparently successfully, that only one of those goats is going to be sent out off the cliff. The question on the table is which one? So Rav Papi, Mishmei Rava Amar Risho Mishaleach. So Rav Papi, quoting Rava, says it's the first one. Rav Shimi, Mishmei Rava Amar Achron Mishaleach. And the Gemara quotes in the name of Rava, the last one. Okay, so different versions in terms of what Rava says. What happens to the middle one? It's the middle child. Okay, look, it's unfortunate, but that's, you know, the middle child is always the one that gets, you know, it's out of luck. You can make an argument for the first, you can make an argument for the last, but certainly not for the middle. Now, Bishlam Rav Shimi Mishmei Derava Damar Achra Mishalech Kasar Ho V'Gamar Bo Kapara. Now, that last opinion of Rava, I hear it very well. It makes a lot of sense, because essentially what basically we're saying is, that's where the mitzvah was finished. It's that last pair that wrapped up the Kapara of Yom Kippur. So therefore, you can make a really easy argument that's the last one that serves as a Seir Mishalech. Ela Rapapi Mishmei Derava Maika Savar. So the Gemara says, but that first opinion that says it's the first Seir Mishalech that sent off, you know, it's great. We started with that Seir Mishalech, but that didn't serve as the final Kapara. So Savala Karav Yossi Dama Mitzvah Berishon. So the Gemara says, well, there is a strong argument that it's the first goat that should be the Seir Mishalech. Why? Mitzvah Berishon. Concept which we don't see that often throughout Shas, but that is, the first one is the one that you should do the mitzvah with. Meaning that in a scenario where you have possibilities, and we could have gone with A, B, or C, but if A was selected first, you should go with A. Simply because it was selected first. It's similar to the Ein Ma'avir Nala Mitzvos, right? But Ein Ma'avir Nala Mitzvos means that here's a mitzvah, and here's a mitzvah, and I'm going to pass over this mitzvah to go that mitzvah. Although, we just had a couple of days ago, right, where we are Ma'avir Nala Mitzvah. But okay, that's fine. But in other words, fine. It is similar to Ein Ma'avir Nala Mitzvos, but over here, it's a little bit different than the following. I have one mitzvah I need to do, which is Seir Mishaleach, and I have a selection of which one I could choose from. Goat 1, goat 2, goat 3. That's why the Gemara said the easiest argument is the last one. That's the easiest argument to make because that's the one where we're finished. Okay, the Gemara says, I'm with you. But we're going to just try to defend the first opinion, which is we should go to the first goat. And the argument you can make for the first goat is mitzvah berishon, this concept of mitzvah berishon. Hi, Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara says, then you know who's a big advocate of this idea of mitzvah berishon? Rabbi Yossi. So Gemara says, where? Where's Rav Yossi state his claim of mitzvah berishon? So Elam Rav Yossi Dikubo Sidnan. So the Gemara says Mishnah and Shkalim. Okay, we get a lot of good review of the Mishnah and Shkalim. Shalosh Kubos Shalosh Shain Shebehem Tarmim Masalishka. We have the Truma Salishka. Remember, after the money is brought into the chamber, so then we're going to do a Truma. We're going to take off three buckets worth. And we do that three times a year. By a kasuv aleim aleph beis gimel. And then the three buckets that are removed from the lishka. So they're going to be labeled A, B, and C. Now I say that actually not totally joking. Meaning one opinion of the Mishnah over there was that it's labeled in Hebrew letters, aleph beis gimel. But there was another opinion over there that it's alpha, beta, gamma. Anyway, but they're labeled A, B, and C. V'tanyam Rav Yosi lama katzav lama al beis gimel, and the Gemara quoted a brisa and shkalim. Why? Why are we labeling them? Meaning, it's all that money is going anyway for the purchasing of carbon seabor. So Eizam Ehem Nitram Arishon, Laviyam and Arishon, Shemitzvah Barishon. So the Gemara says, you know why? I'll tell you why. Because it's best to use the one that was Nitram first. Mitzvah Barishon. Because that was the one that the Mitzvah of Truma was done first. So therefore, we're going to go to bucket number A.
If you can get super technical about that, if you think, imagine the coins that went in, you're actually the coins that went in first one to be taken out last.
Okay, well, the Gemara is going to tackle this from a different perspective, and the Gemara says you're right, but that doesn't translate well to our discussion. Our discussion is where I have three goats, and it's true they could technically be labeled A, B, and C. But let's be honest. There's a difference between the case of the Truma Salishka and the case of our bizarre three goat case. Why? What's the difference? Because in the case of the Truma Salishka, when A was Nitram, so now stop right there. What do I have? A bucket of money that's usable for the purchasing of carbon seaborne. Now, when I take out B, B also will be ready. But A was, if you stopped at right after the Truma of bucket A, you have now a mitzvah in of itself. B hasn't been taken yet, and C certainly hasn't taken yet. So the argument of Rav Yosi of mitzvah Berishon, there in the Mishnayos and Shkalim, yeah, I hear that really well, because while there was A, there was no B and there was not yet a C. So there, of course, mitzvah Berishon, because A at one point in time was a self-standing mitzvah. But let's see over here by the Seir Mishtaleach. Now, it's true that in this bizarre scenario, we do end up with three goats that are going to be sent off the cliff. And it's true, like Rav Nachman says, one goes on one of them. But the application of Rav Yosi over here isn't good. Why not? When can I send the first one off? Not yet. Only when the blood is sprinkled. Only when all the bloods have been sprinkled, right? All 16 plus 16 plus 11, right? 32, 43. Only after all 43 sprinklings have been done, then and only then, can I take a goat and throw it off the cliff. Now, at that point in time, how many eligible goats do I have? I have three legitimate eligible goats. Well, I don't know about legitimate. The middle one is like not even open for discussion. But in other words, but they only became ra'oi at the end and at the same time. So I don't know if I would use Rav Yossi's principle of mitzvah berishon.
They became ra'oi when they had the goral. They became ra'oi when they had the goral.
To serve as a seer mishtalech, but no way can you throw it off the cliff at that point in time. And if you do so,
but the designation took place right down the lottery.
Agreed. But the actual mitzvah of hashlacha of shiluach cannot occur until the end.
But nothing disqualified.
Correct, but it's not disqualified, but it's not yet qualified. Its qualification only comes at the end of the 43 sprinklings. So El Rav Yosi the Pesach. So the Gemara says, okay, but good. The Gemara says, argued well, but there is another Rav Yosi, and that's the following: Amafish Pesach Avid Ve'afish Acher Tachtav. Go back to a Masech to Pesachim. Set aside my carbon Pesach. We lost it. We set aside another carbon Pesach. We recovered the first one. V'acher Kach Nimtza Rishon. V'arish Neim Omdim. Eizem Mehem Sheyirtze Yakriv Divrei Chachamim. So the Chachamim said, look, we only need one carbon Pesach. Which one are we going to offer? We'll choose, whichever. Whichever looks better, looks tastier. Good. Rabbi Yossi Omer Mitzvah Berishon V'imayeshne Muvchar Mimenu Yevienu. So Rabbi Yossi says, Mitzvah Berishon. You know what? The first one that you designated as a carbon Pesach, that was the first one. Mitzvah Berishon. And Rashi points out over here, it's an important Rashi, just to understand the why this argument is better than the previous argument. Rashi says, the last Rashi before the next Mishnah, V'achar kach nimtza arishon, o kodem chatzos arbarasar, o achar chatzos. And over here, in terms of when did I find the lost carbon Pesach, before midday or even after midday. So the case over here can be even when the replacement was designated before Chatzos. So now it's a parallel scenario. When did I designate the Karban Pesach? You're right, before Chatzos I designated it as a Karban Pesach. But when is it actually eligible to be brought as a Karban Pesach? Only after Chatzos. Now when the clock strikes 12, or 12:30, very good. So when the clock strikes 12, so now I have two legitimate animals that are eligible. And Rav Yossi's argument is, mitzvah berishon. I should still give preference to the first one. So now it is really a parallel scenario to our discussion, where I have three goats and their eligibility to be thrown off the cliff occurs at the same time after the 43rd Hazaa. Now, Rabbi Yossi would argue the same thing. Mitzvah Berishon.
But he qualifies that. Is it as long as it's
equal? You're right. You're right. I agree with you. But it's funny. There it's actually serving as a carbon. So you understand the qualification, meaning which one's going to be more covered. Here we're talking about throwing it off a cliff, so I don't know what the qualification.
Yeah, if you think about it, it's a mitzvah from Hashem, so you think either
okay.
Mitzvah, let's say.
Okay, fine. So fine. Divrei Chacham Rav Yossi. Okay. Ve'im hayashnei muvchem mimenu yevinu. Good. So good. So we can argue. We can make an argument that mitzvah berishon, and therefore we should use the first animal that was used. Hadron lachotzi olo. That is the end of the fifth parak of Yuma. So in terms of bottom line, so the in terms of Karban Pesach, so the Chacham, in other words, Rav Yossi is arguing against the Chacham. Chacham's position is no, you could choose. You don't have to give precedence to the first one. That's a halacha. And the other one would be considered Moser Pesach. In terms of Yuma, I mean, we're talking about such a strange scenario, meaning you're ending up the day with two, maybe even three Seir Lazazel. Definitely an oddity. Okay. Good. The fifth parak was the heart of the Masechta. As we transition now from the fifth parak to the sixth parak, in the fifth parak we talked about really the Avodas Yom HaKippurim, meaning taking the blood of the Seir and of the Par, sprinkling it in the Kodesh HaKadashim, in the Heichal, towards the Parochus, on the Mizbeach HaZahav. So that really was like the Kaparas Yom HaKippurim. Okay, and now we're going to take a little step backwards, a small step backwards, and we're now going to talk about the Seir HaMishtaleach, the scapegoat. Now, we already went through the selection process, so we are going a little bit backwards in terms of in terms of navigating through the day of Yom Kippur, but in terms of the selection process, so we need two goats. We already went through the lottery, meaning the fourth parak, we talked about the lottery. But in terms of just setting ourselves up to having two goats in front of us, so the Torah demands that we are going to take two goats and stand them up. We're going back in the Pesukim, after the offering of the bull. So we have the selection of the goats. Pasuk Zayin, right? Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Zayin. V'lakach shnei asirim v'emido sam lefnei Hashem, and he takes two goats. Says the Torah. And he stands him in front of Akash Baruch Hu, Pesach Chol Moed, in front of Ol Moed. And we cast lots, and one lottery is going to go, one of the goats is going to go to Lashem, and the other is going to go to Lazazel. Remember earlier in the Masechta, we spent a lot of time discussing how they have the box, and there are two small little tablets in the box, and he picks up the tablets. One of them is written Lashem, and the other one is written Lazazel. Now, what about the goat that was determined to be Azazel? Yamad Chai Lefnei Hashem. So he's going to stand alive. In other words, he has to survive. Lechaper Alav L'Shalachos Al Azazel. To the point where he's going to be sent off to Azazel. Hamid Barah. Okay. Excuse me. The Mishnah, the first Mishnah of the sixth parak of Yuma starts off with the selection process. Shnei Seiri Yom HaKippur Mitzvah Sam Shiyu Shneim Shavim B'Mareh U'V'Kamo U'V'Damim. So in terms of the two goats that are going to be used for the selection process of Yom Kippur, so the mitzvah is that they should be similar in appearance. Now, appearance over here, Rashi says, not so much in facial appearances, because quite honestly, talking about goats. So, I'll make this even stranger, this discussion. Tosfos Yeshanim is bothered by a question. It's funny. I never would have asked this question, but the Tosfos Yeshanim asks it, so obviously we take it seriously. So he says, you know that there are no two people that look alike. We know that to be so. And we know that empirically. You look around. And he says, and we also know that in halacha as well. How do I know that in halacha we have no two people who look alike? Right, that's exactly what he quotes. So Tosfos Yeshanim says, by the Ben Sora Mora. So the Gemara in the beginning of the 8th parak of Sanhedrin argues that never happened. Ben Sora Mora never happened. How do I know that it never happened? Because he has to point to his parents, Benenu Zeb, right, Enenu Shomea Bikolenu. And right, and mom and dad have to have the same voice and the same intonation, and they have to look the same. And the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, and no two people look the same. So Tosfos Yeshanim makes the obvious distinction. Yeah, by humans, it's impossible for them to look the same. When it comes to animal, by the way, Tosfos Yeshanim is on the Amud Beis. But when it comes to animals, aval gabe behema mia yochol lios yoser v'alfa pishein mamish domos zulazu. Okay, they're not obviously going to look exactly the same.
No. Animal,
right, right. Now I tell you the truth, Rashi. I mean, Rashi doesn't give us a lot of discussion. I mean, that's the nature of Rashi. Rashi is very concise, but Rashi really deals with this issue because Rashi, when the Gemara says that they're similar, Rashi says in color. Meaning that the similarity over here doesn't mean you need identical faces of the goats. Right, Rashi just simply says, Shneim Levanim, O Shechorim, O Sechufim.
Do they have backup hairs for the face?
I mean, based on the discussion the Gemara just had, the answer, I would say yes. In other words, clearly they were ready for, you know, for anything going wrong. They would have a backup plan. So Shneim Shavim Bamar Vekoma Uvedamim. So they have to be the same in terms of appearance, in terms of height, and in terms of value. They have to cost the same. They should also be bought at the same time. Okay, again, the Rishonim talk about how exactly we're going to buy both of them at the same exact moment, meaning perhaps we buy them from the same person. The Rishonim talk about what if I don't buy them from the same person, how then do I buy them simultaneously? All right, anyway. Ba'alfa pishein shavim ksherim. Now, this is not a ma'akev, meaning even if they're not identical, so it works, but as a mitzvah and a muvchar, they should be identical. And even buying them at the same day, at the same time, it's a hider. It's the best thing to do. But again, it's not a ma'akev. Now, what if one of them dies? So if it's before the hagrala, the solution is really simple. Just simply get another one. Now, but what if after the hagrala? What if after the lottery, one of them dies? So now the problem becomes as follows. I'm going to get a replacement, but again, the determination and selection of its replacement can only be done via lottery. So now I need a new lottery, which means I'm going to need two more goats in order to make the lottery, which means that I'm going to have one additional goat. So the yomer imshal shame mace zeshal alavagarala shame yitkayim tachtav imshal azazal mace zeshal alavagarala azazal yitkayim tachtav vehasheni yirachi stai veyimakir viplu dama vlendava. So you're going to replace whichever one died, you're going to replace with this new lottery, and obviously it's going to leave you off with an additional. So the Mishnah says, so what you're going to do with this additional one is let it graze, develop a blemish, and sell it. And the proceeds will go to Nadava. Now, the Mishnah says the word sheni. And whichever one is the second one, the extraneous one, the superfluous one, will simply be left to graze. The obvious question, which the Gemara is going to try to tackle, not today, tomorrow, which one? Meaning, are we going to use the additional from the first pair, or are we going to use the additional from the second pair? Okay. Stay tuned. The Gemara is going to discuss that. Shein chatas tibra mesa. Now, what about the fact that this is a carbon chatas? Isn't a carbon chatzis relegated to die? Gemara says not the carbon seaborne. Chatas meisa is only only a private carbon. Rav Yehuda Omer Tamos. Rav Yehuda disagrees. He says no, it's left to die. Va'onamer Rav Yehuda Nishmach Adam Yamos Hamishtalech Meisa Mishtalech Yishafech Adam. And Rav Yehuda adds another point to the Mishnah, and that is that the fate of the two of them are dependent on one another. Gemara later on will discuss this in much more detail, exactly what he means by this last point. Amud Beis. Ten Rabbanan. Yikach Shnei Si'irei Izim. So the Torah says that you're going to take two goats. Now, the word Si'irei already speaks to the idea that it's two. It's plural. And we know every time the Torah says the word plural and doesn't qualify, doesn't modify, so we know that plural means two. Right? Based on the principle of Tafasta Meruba Lo Tafasta. So we take the smallest unit of plurality, which is two. Fine. So what bothers the Gemara now, the Braisa, Yikach Shnei Si'irei Izim, Miyot Si'irei Shnai, Matam Olamer Shnei, Shiu Shneim Shavim. So the word Shnei really is superfluous. So what is Shnei coming to teach us? Two. That the two of them have to be identical. Now that you might have thought that is not just a halacha, but li'ikuva. It's essential. To which the Gemara says, no, it's not essential. Because the Torah repeats again and again the word si'ir, which means that each one of them can be its own separate unit. So in other words, we're kind of torn between, do they need to be identical or can they be individual? So the resolution is going to be lechatchila, they should be identical, but b'di'avad, they don't have to be. So time to Rami Rachmana, halo Rabbi Rachmana, hava min psul mikuva minalan. So I might have thought that the Gemara says that really, we had a hava mina, we entertained the idea that they have to be identical. So sakadach hamina shnei sheni, I'm sorry, sheni sheni shnei sheni ksiv bei, vahashta, I'm sorry, right, so, It says Shnei on multiple occasions. So every time it says the word Shnei, it means they should be identical. They need to be identical. That's the Havamina. The Gemara says, V'hasha the Rabbi Yechman Asir, Asir, Shnei, Shnei, Shnei Lama Li. So the Gemara says, okay, so but now I know that it's not Likuvo. Why does the Torah say Shnei three separate occasions? Chad Lamara, V'chad Lakoma, V'chad Ladamin. So once they tell us that they have to be in appearance, in height, and in value, they have to be similar, but not ikuva, only as a lechatchila, as a hider in terms of getting the goats. Okay, we'll pause over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from this point. There are going to be other times in the Torah where the Torah is demanding that they be equal. We're going to go over the other times where the Torah uses the word shnayim, and that really is the end of today's lesson.